The following program is an MLWRadio.com production.
Matt
Media Productions.
You remembered them fondly, and then they were gone. And now you want to know who, what, where, when, why it ended with Robbie E. and Matt Coon.
Yo, what's going on, guys? It's hashtag Why It Ended Wednesday, and we are here, and this is a very cool episode because, granted, it's not our first woman that we're having on the show. We've already had former WWE diva Cherry, but it is our first featured woman because Cherry was a bonus episode. So today, Matt, we have on the Queen of Extreme from ECW fame, Francine.
That is very true, and we're very excited. But Robbie, I think you're bearing the lead a little bit. What everybody's talking about is that you wrestled Scott Steiner this past weekend. Are you still alive?
Well, as I'm sitting here in my chair in my office at my house, I am in a full body cast, and I can't move. All that really can move on my body is my mouth. No, I'm just kidding. I'm fine. Granted, I'm not going to lie. I was a little nervous going into it. Some of the suplexes, you kind of got to fend for yourself, but I'm alive. Put it that way.
Well, you know, of course I'm kidding. What everybody's talking about is the Vince Russo interview we had last week. The feedback has been crazy. And first of all, I'd like to thank our fans who didn't like the interview, who said, man, I gave it a shot, but I didn't like it. I can't stand that guy, but I love your show. We appreciate you guys. But at the same time, we also got a lot of feedback, Robbie, saying we had never heard a Vince Russo interview like that. And of course, from his fans that said, Vince is the greatest of all time, bro. So what did you think of the feedback we got about our, what is much talked about, the Vince Russo interview?
Yeah, I mean, it was 50-50. Haters are going to hate, and it is what it is. It's, you know, if you don't like the guy and you don't want to change your mind about him, that's cool. Everyone has their own, you know, their own opinion, and they can say what they want. If they didn't feel that, you know, after hearing his sides of the story and everything and from this version that they're going to give him a chance, that's cool. You could do that as a human being. But a lot of people, you know, it was a pleasant surprise that a lot of people did say, you know what, this guy ain't so bad after all. So, you know, if we could have changed a few people's views on him, then that's cool.
It's a funny thing for me because I am not someone who's ever going to say that Arquette was a good idea or that putting the title on him was a good idea. And to be quite honest, listening back, I hope that at some point in time, I get a chance to ask him some follow-ups because I think there might have been some missed opportunities. But at the same time, the hate that you have for someone who wrote wrestling 20 years ago, to me, it seems out of whack. And I think maybe we should just chill out a little bit.
I agree. Like I said, haters are going to hate. That's what it is, Matt.
Haters are going to hate, and no one is hating Why It Ended. Right now, of course, you can reach us on Twitter at Why It Ended, and also check out our t-shirts, prowrestlingtees.com/Why It Ended, and check us out on YouTube, which is whereitended.com, and make sure to join our Patreon site. We couldn't get this one out early because we are actually taping it minutes before it's posting, but if we record early, you're going to get the show way before everybody else. And Robbie, how can people get a hold of you on social media?
At Robbie E. Impact is Twitter. At Real Robbie E. is Instagram. And then, of course, robbie-e.com is my website where you could find everything that I am up to in the next coming months.
So we are interviewing Francine, the Queen of Extreme, somebody who I don't know a lot about her. I watched ECW. But she seemed to be this young, beautiful thing, and then headfirst immersed in the culture, the bumps and the bruises, the blood, the gore, the almost the entire run of ECW. What do you have to ask Francine?
Well, I have a lot to ask her because, you know, like I was a big ECW fan in high school, so I'm looking forward to just hearing how a lot of the things went down in and out of the locker room and just a lot about, you know, ECW and how she got her start.
Yeah, I'd like to see maybe if she has anything to say about the Todd Gordon mole situation. But at the same time, I also want to hear her side of the story of Extreme coming up next on Why It Ended. The Sellers Law Firm, LLC, is a law firm focusing on family law and criminal defense, while still providing a wide range of general legal services, from adoptions, child support, custody, divorce, and legitimation, to DUI, traffic tickets, misdemeanors, and felonies. The Sellers Law Firm is here to help you.
As a proud member of the Griffin Spalding Chamber of Commerce, Griffin Downtown Council, and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local... Fuck.
You were on a roll. Hold on. You were on a roll, man.
I don't know what any of these words mean, so hold on. As a proud member of the Griffin Spalding Chamber of Commerce, Griffin Downtown Council, and several legal organizations, the Sellers Law Firm strives to serve the local community while expanding its services throughout the state of Georgia.
Of course, if they can ever be of service, please let Judy, Bobby, or Jody know. That's what family is for.
Whether you find yourself in need of a lawyer now or whether you just want to ask a few questions, give them a call at 770-415-9848 at the Sellers Law Firm, where clients become family.
And you never know when you're going to need law services, so go ahead and follow Jody Sellers at Sellers Law Firm, S-E-L-L-E-R-S Law Firm, and they're also a sponsor of wrestling. Is that right, Robbie?
Yep, UCW Hometown Throwdown in Summerfest. They're sponsoring August 11th in Barnesville, Georgia.
Sellers Law Firm, LLC, where clients become family. Hey guys, this is Matt Kuhn, and we want to thank everybody who listens to Wine Ended, but I want to give a special shout out to a couple people who have helped with this show and also some previous shows. And definitely give our good friends at OVP Podcast a listen and a follow. You can find them at ovppodcast.com. Now, they help me and they help us with a lot of editing and audio stuff. The same job that got me started in all this, he's helping us once in a while with, and he definitely helped out with the last few shows, and I want to give him a shout out and give his podcast a listen. Also want to thank Jeremy Bagley at Jeremy J. Bagley, B-A-G-L-E-Y on Twitter, for some help with the research. If you want to have a good podcast, you got to do the work. If you want to do the work, you got to have some good people. Thanks, guys. Make sure to give him a follow and keep listening to Why It Ended. All right, guys, joining us now, we finally got a lady to join us this week, and hopefully she's not too scared. We have a hardcore icon. You know her from ECW and, of course, WWECW. We're pleased to welcome Francine. Francine, how are you doing today?
I'm doing great. Why should I be scared?
I'll tell you why you should be scared. You should be scared because I'm sure you know that Tony Schiavone has a major crush on you. But I got to tell you, all week since we've announced that you were going to be on this show, Matt Kuhn, my co-host, has been just obsessing over you. I think he has a crush on you bigger than Tony Schiavone, if that's possible.
No. Oh, I'm blushing. Get out.
Matt.
No way.
Well, I'll tell you, it's Matt. True, but I'm in good company with any wrestling fan of that era. And how much better looking I am than Tony Schiavone is really of no consequence.
Tony's pretty good looking. I don't know. I'd have to see a recent picture of you.
I love Tony. I worked with him and I worked on the podcast, and it's always funny to hear him talk about you. Let's talk about that a little bit. That's kind of been an interesting thing, the Schiavone thing, where people talk about you and this new crush Schiavone has on you, because he was not aware of ECW before he started doing the podcast.
Right. On Twitter, because I just had joined Twitter this January, because I was doing WrestleCon, and actually Daphne from WCW, she's one of my best friends. She was here over the holidays with my family, and she's like, you have to join Twitter because that's the only way you can tell people where you're going to be, because the last 10 years I've been kind of under a rock. And I said, well, I don't want to join Twitter because nobody probably remembers me or wants to talk to me. I'm kind of in the past. And she's like, no, it'll be good. So I joined, and then I got like a good amount of followers pretty quickly. And then I started seeing this Conrad guy, and I listened to one of his podcasts, and Tony was on it, and it was about Barely Legal. And I heard them talking about me, which was hysterical. So I like it because he's kind of keeping my name out there for me. So Tony, thank you. Conrad, thank you. I appreciate it. But yeah, he went from like Medusa to Deborah to me. And I said, well, I'll be his flavor of the month now. He'll probably go to somebody else soon, but I'll just ride the wave as long as I can. So
hey, see how long it lasts. You know, Matt, I asked Francine the other day, I said, hey, do you have Instagram? Because I wanted to tag her because I was posting that she was going to be on the show. And she goes, dude, it took me 10 years to get Twitter. Instagram, yeah, not yet.
No, I'm not ready for like Instagram or Snapchat. I just learned Twitter. Let me just play with this for a while. I'm good.
Well, fair enough.
Yeah. Hey, so Francine, did you grow up loving wrestling or was it something you kind of fell into?
I did not. I didn't start watching, it was WWF. I mean, I didn't watch any of the old stuff. I watched WWF and I started going to shows at about like 19 years old. And then when I was 20 years old, I found ECW because I lived in Philadelphia.
Well, how did you get into it at 19? Like what made you start going to shows so late?
I think I saw Raw. I think I just came across Raw and I was like, oh, wow, this is pretty cool. And like, I had a bunch of nephews that would watch it. And I mean, like, I knew who Hulk Hogan was. I know who the Roddy Piper and the bigger names, but I never really like sat down and watched it with them because I just kind of whatever. And then, I just started watching one day and I liked it. And I went, here's a funny story. I actually entered a contest. I don't know how many people know this, but there was a station called, I think it was called Video Jukebox. Do you guys remember that where you could, you can call
in
the video?
Right. I remember that.
Yeah. You can request like your favorite song and they would play like the video for 99 cents or something. So they had a contest and it was like, something about, I don't know if it had to do with WrestleMania, but it was WWF and Madison Square Garden. And the grand prize winner got to go, and they got to go to Raw. They were put up in New York for like two nights. You got to go to Monday Night Raw and sit in the front row. And then you got to go to this thing at Madison Square Garden. There's on top of it, there's like a room. And they were having like a WWF party and the superstars were going to be there. Well, I entered this contest and I won. And so I got to go to Raw and I got to do a commercial with Vince McMahon. And it's so funny because it was so long ago and people had the clip of me on Raw, put me up at this nice hotel and I got to bring a girlfriend with me and we went to Raw and then we went to this party and they fed us and, I had never met any wrestlers at that point and, it was fun, you know, I didn't leave any of them either. Just
that's what I was going to say. Yeah. Two girls at a party in the 90s in wrestling. Yeah. I mean, somebody had to at least hit on you.
Robbie,
right?
That was so weird. They got invited to the party. Isn't that strange that these two 19-year-old girls got?
No, the party was included in the package that you won. You got to go to this press party.
Did this spark interest in you working?
Right. So I'm sitting in front of the television, eating dinner, flipping channels. Sports Channel came on and ECW was on. And I figured I'd give it a try because I was only watching WWF. I wanted to see what else was out there. And I didn't recognize a single wrestler, but I kept watching because they were doing some crazy stuff. And I continued to watch them for about a month or so. And they had a commercial that said, you want to be a wrestler or manager of LA, call this number. And I hated my job so much that I was like, I'm going to call the number. And
what was your job at the time?
I was a data processor for an insurance company.
Well, this was a big switch, huh?
Yeah. So like I had a cubicle. I didn't have a window. Like I was indoors all day and I had to go into Center City and I just hated it so much. And I just figured, oh, this will be a fun change. And so I called the number and I didn't know anybody. I had went to that party and met like a couple wrestlers there, but it wasn't like I kept in touch with anyone or anything. So I cold called this number and a lady answered and she just took my information and she told me where to go. It was down in Center City. It was a pawn shop and it was Todd Gordon's porn stop. So I had to get buzzed in, and then there's, you know, these cages you had to walk through, and then there was another door you had to go through, and then I had to go in a back door, and I was scared out of my gourd because I didn't know what was happening. And Todd's just sitting behind the desk with his feet up, and he's looking at me, and the first thing he says is, "Yeah, you're a pretty girl. You won't have to bump."
And you know, what is a bump?
I didn't know what a bump was, but we all know he lied.
And how right was he?
Yeah. He wasn't. He was not. So I from that day on, I started their wrestling school, and it was just behind the, you know, it was in the arena, in the back room, in the dressing room. They had an old ring, and J.T. Smith trained me back there. So
you were being trained to wrestle, and at the same time you're being trained to wrestle, is that when you debuted as the fan cheering for Stevie Richards on TV?
No. So I'm learning to wrestle. I have a tryout match in front of Todd, because at this point they're telling me, you know, you need to work, you need to wrestle. So I said, okay. So we did a match and everything. And then they tell me to come to a show, a house show in Montgomeryville, Pennsylvania. So I go to this show, and it was one of the first nights that Paul was in as the head booker. And so I go and I introduce myself to Paulie, and he says to me, "Do you want to take a choke slam tonight?" And I said, I didn't know what it was, to be honest with you. And I just looked at him and I said, "Sure." And he said, "Okay." He said, "You're going to win a pretend beauty pageant, and you're going to be the timekeeper. And then 911 is just going to grab you, and he's going to give you a choke slam. Okay?" And I said, "Okay." And so they introduced me as this local beauty pageant winner. And I just came out and I was waving at people, and I rang the bell for most of the night. And then, you know, the match starts, and I see 911 come to the ring, and he just grabs me out of nowhere. I didn't even know what the spot was, you know, for him to grab me. He just came and grabbed me, and he gave me the choke slam, and the whole place just went, "Oh," because they had no clue who I was, and they thought I was this little beauty pageant winner. And so they take me out on a stretcher, and they took me right to a car, and I went right home. So that
did
was
he
like,
go over the move with you? Like, did he show you how to take the move and everything?
No, I was just told he's going to grab you by the neck and just pick you up and throw you.
And back then, guy on girl violence, I mean, that had to be like a huge shock to people, because that was like unheard of back then, right?
Well, I guess so. But I think because no one knew me, and I wasn't like, it was my first night doing anything, and no one knew who I was. They kind of believed that I was just a local girl who won like this local dinky beauty pageant. So back then too, I was like 110 pounds. I was nothing. So I think for this big guy to just come and rip me out of my chair and literally just choke slam me was like, oh, you know, it was like that white noise. Everybody. And then it was dead silent, because everybody was like, "Is she dead?" You know,
The 911 choke slam is not a finesse thing of beauty. It was a very scary looking, sloppy looking choke slam. From my estimation as a fan, that must have been the biggest bump you had taken up to that point. And do you remember the impact and how you felt the next day? And did you hit your head? Was it a tough night?
That was the first bump I'd taken from a guy besides training. And I didn't take any finishers in training. It was just the basics, you know what I mean? So that was like the first finishing move that I've ever taken. And I just remember, like, I don't even know if I hit my head, because I was so nervous. Like, I didn't know what to expect. So when it was done, it was like kind of like a relief. Like, I was like,
"Oh,
I'm done."
It was just over with. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And then, like, every time, like, I always volunteered to take finishers from the guys, because I wanted that to be my thing. But I never wanted to try it ahead of time, because I always tell Paul, like, if something happens or if it hurts, I'm not going to want to do it again. So let's just do it out there for the first time.
When you did the choke slam that night, so, you know, they told you to come to the house show, was this like a, "Hey, just come, you're not getting paid," or do you actually even get paid the first night?
I think I got paid. It wasn't a lot, but I think I got paid for it.
So they did give you something for it. So at least you got something for your troubles.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I got paid from, the get go with Paul. Yeah.
Well, what about the training? When you train, were they training you for free or did you have to pay for that?
No, I paid for it. I paid, I think I paid like $1,500.
Wow. Which was back then was a lot of money.
I guess. I don't know what they pay now, but I remember I paid three installments of $500.
Stop using your hand. .com. Now, of course, you know by now about our great sponsor, Pleasure Products USA. They are a huge supporter of Why It Ended and also your online destination for innovative quality and affordable items geared towards men's sexual pleasure. As you know, or you probably should know, their signature product is the 3V Starlet Stroker. That's right, the 3V Starlet Stroker. It has an amazing, realistic internal texture, multiple vibration settings, and for the finishing maneuver, an actual voice of an adult film star is recorded to the device to make more than the crowd pop. Now, if you're not sure about all this, this is all very new to everybody. Now, if you're not sure about all this, if you're not sure about this, and this is all new to you, check this out. You can try a free, that's right, a free stroker. All you have to do is just pay the shipping and handling of $6.95. For just $6.95 shipping and handling, you can get a free stroker. All you got to do is go to pleasureproductsusa.com/product/Josephine. That's Josephine, and enter the coupon code FISTBUMP. So whether you're going to get the 3V Scarlet Stroker, or you just want to try out, or you just want to dip your toe in the water, so to speak, with this free stroker for only $6.95 shipping and handling, make sure to check out our good friends at StopUsingYourHand.com. Now remember, to get that free stroker, go to PleasureProductsUSA.com/product/Josephine, and the coupon code is FISTBUMP. That's pretty funny. But you know what's not funny? PleasureProductsUSA.StopUsingYourHand.com. Today. How did it come to where you go from the girl who gets choke slammed to being a regular and being with the pit bulls?
So I trained a little more after that, and then they just kept telling me to come to house shows. And I think I went to house shows for about a year before they wanted me to work. I remember I was in Wildwood, and I got a call from Tommy Dreamer, and he was like, "You need to come to this show." And so I went home, and I went to the arena, and it was the start of Buell and I's feud. And so they needed someone to work with her, and I was already doing stuff for them on house shows. So they said, okay, so we're going to put you as Stevie Richards' girlfriend. And I looked him up, and I wanted to know what he wore. And so I went, and I had like a bunch of these Daisy Duke shorts airbrushed with his name on it, and these half tops and tank tops. And I was just supposed to be a girl from South Philly that was this big fan of his. And they said, well, you're going to sit in the front row. We're going to, you know, put you in the front row during. And I said to myself, oh, my gosh, I'm scared to death because, you know, back then it was 99.9% male in our audience. There wasn't too many females at all, you know? So for me, they take me out and they sit me between, I think it was like two guys, and like the guy behind me's touching my hair. And I'm just like, oh my gosh, like, what am I doing? You know, like, is it the spot yet? I wanted to get out of there so bad, but, it was for TV, and that's how we first started. And, I was just a fan. I held up signs for him, and he would come over and give me a kiss. And finally, Buell and I started fighting, and we jumped the rail, and we just started beating each other up in the crowd. And then it's just, you know, it just led to the infamous cat fight, and we took it from there. And then, you know, we had our match, and she beat me with the help of Raven and Stevie, and then I left Stevie and joined the Pitbulls at that point.
How did you get along with her? Like, was it great working with her? Did you guys butt heads?
Oh, yeah. No, we didn't butt heads in the beginning. We actually roomed together. So we were like best friends. Like if I would go to where she lived, I'd stay with her. When she stayed in Philly, she stayed with me. And then when we were on the road, we always roomed together. So yeah, I loved working with her. It was great.
Was that the case for everyone? Like, did you get along with everyone back there when you first came? Did people give you a hard time because you were new or anything?
No, nobody gave me a hard time. I mean, I feel like I wanted to prove myself because I didn't want the guys to think like, oh, you know, she's just a rat or she's just some girl that's not going to work. That's why I said, whatever you guys want me to do, I will take your finish and I will not complain about it, you know, and I just tried to do as much as I possibly could. And anytime Paul would say, are you okay with this? I'd be like, yeah, I'll do it. You know, I'll do it. Just we'll do it out there because like I said earlier, I never wanted to do it ahead of time because I like, especially like the eliminators, the total elimination, like that move. Oh my gosh. Horrible. And if I would have practiced it, I probably would have cried. Didn't want to do it again.
Robbie and I were talking before we got you on the air. And I said, I want to ask her about total elimination. It doesn't seem like you were protected as well as you could have been sometimes. And that move in particular looked like it was just brutal.
It was devastating. It was one of the worst bumps I've ever taken. And the reason why, Cronus, God rest his soul, was a big guy. And he would go high and Perry would go low. And every time he would go high, his ass would land on my face. So, because he comes down, you know, he has to come down and he would always either smush my face or like he would like get me in the neck or something.
So you're taking the
bump and then you're having this like, I don't even know how much he weighed. He was way bigger than me and he'd always like land on my face. I'm just like, this sucks.
Do you watch some of this back and just say like, how the hell did I do this? Like, what was I thinking?
I can't believe, like, I'm 46 now, and right now, like, I don't watch myself, but, like, some people put GIFs on my Twitter page or whatever, and I just look and I go, I don't know how I could do that, because nowadays, I don't know if I could. I don't know if it's because I'm older or I know how I feel now at this point. I remember, like, 20 years ago, my mom telling me, you're going to have arthritis when you're 40, and she was right, because I am like a hot mess right now, but you know, back then nothing bothers you and you're above the law and you want to do everything. And, I just wanted to do as much as I can to leave a mark on the business, whether,
this is what, like 96, right?
95.
So what was
I started training in 93.
So around like the 95, when you started on TV, like what was the scene backstage? Cause everyone, you know, you hear the stories, how crazy it was with fights and alcohol and drugs and weapons and crazy people. I mean, how crazy was it backstage?
It was crazy. Yeah, it was crazy. It was crazy.
If the police came in the back and raided everyone's bag, would half of the roster have been arrested?
At least a quarter would have.
Would they even need to look in bags? Weren't there drugs and alcohol being done in open view in the locker room in those years in ECW?
Not all the time. I mean, there was a couple times I've seen things. Like, honestly, I never was a part of that crowd. I was friends with everybody and, you know, sometimes I would act as a lookout if somebody was doing something they weren't supposed to, just to help out or whatever. But it wasn't like, you know, there's a pile of cocaine on the table. Let's all stick our head in it. It wasn't like the mafia or I don't know. It wasn't as bad as people make us out to be. Like, I get really offended sometimes when they, you know, talk about a lot of the guys who passed away and how big of losers the ECW locker room was. And it wasn't the case at all. You see that a lot all over in wrestling because I've worked for a lot of companies. It wasn't just our company that did drugs and drank. It's all over the place. We got a bad rap. There's a lot of people that were straight edge and didn't do a thing. People tend to dwell on, you know, the people that did the drugs. And I'm not saying there weren't a lot of them, but I think it's all over. I don't think it was just an ECW, to be honest with you.
Well, you guys are an easy target because you know, ECW is not around anymore, and also just the legend of it, the legacy. Even talking ourselves to Justin Credible, you know, a few weeks ago, he told some stories as well. So we're not trying to paint ECW with a brush. It's just more of the sign of the times, I think.
Yeah, I, you know, we didn't have a wellness policy, so maybe that was part of the reason why, you know, you let Sandman, like, drink 8 beers in the ring. Like, if I drank 2 beers, I'd be like, hey, you know, some people, I'm just a lightweight. Some people can hold their liquor better than others. Some people can, they say they can work better when they're high, or I don't know. I don't, that wasn't my deal. So I can't speak for anybody else. And I've seen things, but you know, back then it was just like, well, I'm not their mother. They can do what they want. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I don't know. It's now it's sad when I look back. Yeah. So for me, it was just like, we would perform. We would go back to, like, if it was the Travel Lodge or the Holiday Inn or whatever, or the Marriott, and the show would be on. We would get a couple drinks and we would sit with the fans and we'd watch the show. And then I'd go to bed. Whatever the other guys did was their business, you know? So, but I'm sure there was debauchery. I just didn't take part in it.
How was, how much of a motivator was Paul Heyman for you?
Oh, he could convince you that the sky was green and the grass was blue. That man, I wasn't a puppet. He wasn't a puppet master. I hate when people use that term. I didn't drink his Kool-Aid and all that kind of stuff. I believed in our product. I believed in our locker room, and I believed in Paul. And I absolutely loved working for ECW. I was there for 7 years. I would have been there longer if we didn't go bankrupt. He was just... he didn't want to be known as one of the boys, I think. He was so approachable, and he would listen to ideas, and just like a different type of boss, you know? He was my boss, but he didn't act like a boss, you know what I mean?
You know, that probably worked good and bad for him, and one of the things that we've heard in our interviews is the pay flow, the money flow for the people that worked for him. Were your checks pretty solid? Were they pretty regular? Did you have to take other things instead of money? Did you have checks that maybe were good much after they were given to you? Or was it pretty smooth?
So the whole check bouncing thing happened later, you know, towards the end of the run for us. So I did have 10 checks in a row bounced. But he made good on all 10 checks for me, and he also paid all the bank fees.
You know, that's something we've heard from somebody else, is that the checks did bounce, but he made good on all of them.
But he figured it out.
Yeah, he made good because I just brought him the stubs, and I said, okay, this one didn't work, this one didn't. And he just gave me the cash, and he gave me, I think it was like $35 per check, and he paid all that off too. So, I got my money back, but... you know, towards the end, it was kind of like we were all hanging on because we wanted it to work so bad. We didn't want it to end. And people always say, how stupid are you for, you know, working for free or working for late pay? And it's like, if you believe in something, you're going to do whatever you can do to help save it.
Hoping that it'll turn around, right?
Exactly. And I mean, you know, he would tell us he was having meetings and this and that. And, you know, to this day, I still don't know 100% what happened. But for me, I don't badmouth Paul, because without Paul, I wouldn't have a career. And he saw something in me, and he believed in me, and he gave me a spot, and he let me run with the ball. And for that, I'm ever forever grateful to him. So, you know, I'm sad at the way it went down, but that's life sometimes. It doesn't work out. What can you do?
Going back a little bit, you know, we talk about Paul Heyman being this creative guy, this motivator, a kind of guy people like to work for. Maybe he had some issues in the business department. He had a business partner who you first made contact with, Todd Gordon, as you said. But eventually, mm-hmm. you start seeing your friends, your coworkers leaving one by one, and then the big blow up with Todd Gordon and Bill Alfonso, and where they're saying that Todd Gordon was a mole. How did all that play out? How much of that did you see when that happened?
I heard a voicemail. There was a voicemail, and there was an exchange of words, and they were saying that they were going to go to WCW. And
was that a voicemail that Paul played for you?
Somebody played it for me. I'm not going to say who it was, but we all were together in a house, and we were privy to this phone call, and we heard the conversation.
And the voices. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I was going to say they denied that it was them on the phone, but I heard the phone call, so I heard the message rather. I don't know, but then I know that Fonzie, after that, Fonzie came and had that match with Beulah and literally gutted himself like a pig. And I think that saved his job that evening, because I think he might've been on his way out the door. But I know Todd was gone after that.
As an ECW loyalist, as someone who said you would have worked for him forever, you hear this, you hear this voicemail. One voice on the other, someone you know, the other voice, maybe someone working for WCW, maybe Terry Taylor or someone like that. You hear this. What does that do to you personally when you hear this kind of someone who's trying to undermine everything that you're trying to build? What does that do to you personally?
I don't know. I mean, for me, anyone that left for their own reasons. Whether it be more money for their family, if they could get a better spot, whatever. I never judged anybody for leaving. If they wanted to leave, then so be it. Like, my whole thing was, I just was so comfortable there. I liked being the bigger fish in the small pond rather than being a little fish in a big pond sort of thing. I got a couple calls to leave at one point, and I was honest and I told Paul. And Paul came back and said, well, I can't offer you that money. And I just said, well, what can you do? Can you do anything for me? And he said, I can give you a raise. And I just said, okay, then I'll stay.
Was it true that WWE reached out to you at one point to be with, was it with Brother Love?
Yeah. So a guy named Ed Cohen was calling me. I don't think he works there anymore. But he was calling. And he explained to me, like, they were going to bring Brother Love back, and they wanted to have, like, a Sister Love. And they were, instead of using, like, I guess, models or whatever from each city, they wanted to have a constant on board, somebody under contract. And they, they had heard about me and saw me bump and stuff, and they wanted to bring me in. And I just kept saying, I'm really happy with Paul, and oh, Paul's a good kid. Just think about it, is what the guy kept telling me. And then, like, he'd call my house when I wasn't home, and he talked to my parents because, I'm young. I'm still living at home at this point. And so I'd come home, and my mom would say, oh, that Ed Cohen's such a nice man. He told me you'll make so much more money if you work for Vince McMahon. And I was just like, Mom, I don't want to go, And she's like, well, you'd make X amount of dollars and blah, blah, blah. So finally I went, and he always told me, don't tell Paul we're calling you. And finally I was just like, I can't not tell Paul anymore. I have to tell him, because if I don't and somebody else does, I feel like I'm like cheating on the company or something. So I went up to Paul and I told him everything. And that's when he gave me the raise. And the next phone call, I just told him I wasn't interested.
Do you have any regrets about that?
Absolutely not. Absolutely not. I never wanted to work there.
And you know what's crazy? They never brought him back anyway, right? They never brought Brother Love back, did they?
I'm not sure, but I mean, I didn't want to leave. I didn't want to. My goal was never to work for WWF or WWE. I was a fan of theirs, but when I hit ECW, like, I wanted to work there until I couldn't work anymore.
Yeah.
Like, I even went as far as to go up to New York and to go to the studio, and I'd sit there for hours, and I'd watch Paul edit and make the show. like edit the tapes, add the music, splice it, this, that, and the other. Because I wanted to learn stuff behind the scenes because I said, well, nobody wants to see a broad that's 50 running around ringside. So maybe I could do something like in production or help out behind the scenes. So I was trying to learn stuff as I was working.
That's
and
awesome.
I would go up on Monday mornings and I would sit and I would just watch him work because he never slept. He worked all through the night and I would just sit behind him and he would show me how to do this and how to do that. And I just found it really interesting. And, you know, I said maybe one day I could be helping you out, you know, behind the scenes, but it didn't happen. So but it was fun. It was fun watching him. But I had no intentions of ever leaving.
I recently saw, actually saw today on Twitter, that Shane Douglas and you are going to be doing some appearances together. And of course, that harkens back to your run with him as your as the quote-unquote head cheerleader for Shane Douglas. And you were kind of at the top of the card with him, and you helped him twice win the World Heavyweight Championship with interference, and you also were associated with the Triple Threat. Those must have been maybe the highlight of your years with ECW?
I think that was I worked with some great people the whole time I was there, but people just out of everybody, people always put Shane and I together. And I think just, we were this monster heel team that everybody just loved to hate. And we were together for like 3 years, which is kind of long in the business. I probably would have stayed with him longer if he didn't jump ship, but you know, he had to do what he had to do and that's fine. But yeah, I mean, we did an appearance this past weekend for Heroes and Legends, in Knoxville, Tennessee. And people were just, they were just amazed because I haven't done anything with him in like 11 years. I think our last appearance together was in 07.
And why is that? Why weren't you guys doing stuff together?
Well, because I got married and I got pregnant pretty quickly after I got married. And so I didn't want to leave while I had little babies home. I mean, for me, like my ultimate goal in life was to be a mother. So I said, once I get pregnant, I'm out of the business. I'm done. And so I got married. I had the babies and like Rob Feinstein kind of pulled me back in like 3 or 4 years ago because there was local stuff. And my husband's like, yeah, go ahead, because you can always drive home afterwards. And so I did that. And then I took another 3 years off. But then now my kids are older and they're, I don't know why, but people like want to see us. And my husband's like, well, if they want to see you, I can handle the kids now. They're older. You can go. Go and make money. Just do the bigger conventions that are worth it.
Plus, so I'm sure it's still fun for you, right? To meet fans and get out of the house.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. It's like a little vacation. I mean, I miss my kids terribly. Like I'm always on video with them going back and forth on FaceTime because I miss them, but it is great. I mean, I hadn't done anything in so long. Like I did, WrestleCon. I did my first WrestleCon, which was huge. There were so many people there and kind of got my toes wet. And, I met a great promoter over at Heroes and Legends, Chad. And now I got a bunch of stuff for them coming up. Because he booked me on all these things, and I'm going to California in a couple weeks for AWS, and there's just so much going on. Saturday, I'm working with Shauna Oliver for Kayfabe Commentaries, and I'm doing my first shoot for them, and I'm getting a doll, like an action figure,
nice.
And I've never had one. All this stuff at 46 years old, I'm like, I can't believe this is, like, everything's falling on my lap because I joined Twitter. Which is amazing. So I, honest to God, I didn't think anybody even cared to see me anymore. So it's really humbling and sweet that people are actually coming out to say hi. And I'm really taken aback by it, but I love it. It's great.
Well, just think what'll happen if you join Instagram too. Now you have to.
maybe down the line, but not right now.
So you, is it true that you broke your pelvic bone from a press slam from Bam Bam Bigelow?
Yeah, it is. So we were supposed to do a spot together that night. And I love Bam Bam. God rest his soul. Love him to death. He's just a big teddy bear. He was one of my best friends there, you know. And he tells me, we're going to do something. I don't know what yet, but don't worry. I'll take care of you. Of course, I trust everybody there. So I'm like, okay. Now, about a month before that, I had gotten breast implants. And so I hadn't really bumped yet. So this is my first bump back, and I'm at the ECW arena. And I go in, and I think I smacked him or something, and he grabs me and he presses me over his head. So now I'm about 10 feet in the air, and I'm looking around. I'm like, I wonder what he's going to do to me. And he just kind of threw me to the side. And so as I'm floating down, I said, well, I can't land on my front, because I didn't want to, you know, pop an implant. So I turned my body. I was afraid to bump flat, and I landed on my hip. And Paul didn't air it because it was so gross. I went to the studio and I watched it. You see my whole pelvis pop out and then go back in. And so I couldn't put any weight on my left leg, and they had to stretcher me to the back, and they were like, you have to go to the hospital. And here I had fractured it in two places. So I had to be on crutches for 7 weeks, but I didn't miss any work. I went to work on crutches the next week. So, and I actually bumped at the pay-per-view while my hip was broken. I swung a crutch at Bam Bam, and then he swung back and I ducked it, and I bumped on my good hip and rolled the ring like an idiot. But yeah, that's what we did. So we worked hurt.
I'm sure Robbie knows what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Well, kind of. You know, I'm not as hardcore as you guys were back then, but I mean.
But you got it. You got it.
No, I do for sure.
Now, yeah. One thing about, you know, you were with Shane Douglas until he left, but you were definitely a mainstay and somebody that the fans needed to see and somebody that Paul wanted in there the whole time, because wherever you went was where kind of the action was, you know. You partnered up with Tommy Dreamer, you aligned yourself with Raven, and then you were associated with Justin Credible as he won the title. You were with Justin until the very end of ECW. You must have felt like you were a really big part of this company.
I mean, I like to think I was. I was there for almost the whole duration, like the 7 years, you know. Paul just, I was blessed. Paul always put me with top guys, so I was always kind of in the main event or up there on the card. And he let me do promos and talk, which I was getting my feet wet with that, because like when I was with Shane would talk for hours, and I love Shane, but he would like to talk, and I didn't really get too much mic time with him. But I got a lot with Tommy, and I got a lot with PJ. So I think I found myself on the microphone later. And he just, like I said, he gave me the ball. He let me run with it. So I hope he was happy with my performance. I tried my best. It was a lot of fun.
So were you actually on the last ECW show?
I was. It was Pine Bluff, Arkansas. And I remember, towards the end, we were, the morale was super low. Paul didn't even come to the show that night. Tommy was in charge. We all knew that was it. And
how did you know that was it? Like, who had told you that that was going to be it? Or did you all just feel it? Or
yeah, well, when Paul didn't show up, like a light went off, and then nothing else was scheduled at that point. So we were kind of like, okay, this has to be the last show. And I remember I started crying, and all the guys went to the ring to drink a beer, like give a toast to the, I couldn't even go out there. I was a blubbering idiot, just crying. And cause I mean, like I said, I was there for 7 years. I didn't know what I was going to do. And at that point, Sandman pulls me aside. He's like, girl, you need a job. I'm opening a bar. You're going to work with me. And I was like, great. So now I'm working at a bar, which I only worked for 2 nights for him. It didn't take off. But shortly after, I went to TNA anyway and worked there for a little bit. And then I just went back, you know, and did some indies. And I kept busy on the indie scene until the fake ECW opened up in 2006.
And then how did that come about? Yeah.
They just tried to hire, I think, as many ECW people that didn't have any heat, you know, with them. And I was promised one thing, and then I get there, and none of it ever happened. And I begged them to let me work, and they wouldn't let me work, and they just wanted bikini contest. And I never did bikini contest. And at this point, I'm 34 years old. I had 13 years in the business. I had more seniority than any of the girls in that locker room, although I went in as humble as can be. And if I went to catering, I'd say, does anybody need anything? I'd bring back cookies and waters, and trying to take care of these girls that have been in the business 2-3 years, because it was their locker room. It wasn't mine, you know, and I just tried to be really humble and just keep to myself. And finally, I couldn't take it anymore. And I got pulled by Johnny Ace twice in a day. And I just started crying, and I said, please send me home. Just give me my release. And he was just like, no, we're not going to release you. And I was like, but you're not letting me work. This is dumb. Like, why am I even here? You know? And oh, no, we'll figure something out, you know? And I said, okay. And then the same day I'm in line to get my draw, and I hear Francine, can I speak to you? And I turn around and it's Vince. And I'm just like, oh yeah, sure. And I get out of line, and he's like, will you take a walk with me? And I said, yes. And so we go walk around the building, and he tells me, you know, pretty girls are a dime a dozen, and you're a beautiful girl, but I don't know what you can do. And I just looked at him, and I said, didn't you buy our tape library? And he goes, well, yes. And I go, you don't watch it? And he goes, no, I don't know anything about ECW. And I'm just like, my mind was blown. I was like, you hired all these people? You don't know what anybody can do? You know?
And yeah, why am I here?
I just told him, I said, look, I'm willing to do whatever. I said, I'm not keen on these bikini contests. I said, I want to work. I said, I worked for Paul. I can work. I can talk. I can, whatever. Like, let me do something. So he goes, okay. He goes, the next time you see me, wherever I am, I want you to run up to me and smack me on the back and say, hey, Vince, what do you got for me? And I looked at him and I was like, really? And he goes, yeah. He goes, can you do that? I said, yes, sir, I can do that. So then we're at Raw a couple of nights later or whatever, and I see him standing there, and he's with a bunch of suits, and like an idiot, I run, like he's like 100 feet away. I run down the hallway, and I smack him so hard on the back, and I was like, hey, Vince, what do you got for me tonight? And he hugged me. And I'm like in this embrace, and I'm like, okay, what's happening? And then he goes, that's my girl. That's what I wanted to hear. And he walked away. And now I'm just standing there like an idiot. And the other guys that were standing, they're just looking at me. So I just quietly, I walked away and I went into the locker room and I just sat there. The next night was SmackDown. Cause we were SmackDown ECW. SmackDown would go, and then we would tape our show after SmackDown. And my name was on the wall to work. So I don't know if that did it by smacking him on the back, but the next night I was on TV. So for the next couple of weeks I did TV, and they put me with Balls Mahoney, and I was fine with that because I love Balls, and it was a spot. I didn't care who I was with. And I got to work with Shelly Martinez, who's one of my dearest friends, and Kevin Thorne, and it was cool. And then they do the piss test. And Balls got pinched for some illegal substance, and he's off the road. And I get a phone call, oh, you better pack your bikini. And I was just like, dear God, what world am I in? This sucks, you know, because now I'm doing bikini contest again. I lost my spot, and I wasn't on TV anymore. So at that point, I'm miserable, didn't even want to go to work. And then a month and a half after that, Johnny Ace calls me, yeah, we really don't have anything for you. And I was like, yeah, you really didn't try. I said, but thank you anyway. And he's like, you can't work for TNA. I was like, I don't even want to work anymore. I'm so disgusted.
Did he actually say that? Did he say to you, you can go work for TNA?
You can't work for TNA.
Oh, you can't?
No, you have a 90-day clause because you get paid for 3 months afterwards.
Right, so you couldn't wrestle or do bikini contests for TNA for 90 days.
No, I couldn't do my... I was heartbroken about that. No, I could not. I'm sorry. I was just going to say, at that point, I was so frustrated. Like, I just... That was my last big run. I figured that would be my last big run. I tried to make some money. TNA wasn't even in my sight. Like I didn't even want to be in the business anymore, but I figured, well, I'll just go back and do some indies because I was just on television. You know, I could probably get a good price, to do indie work. And that's what I did. I went back and I worked every single weekend, and most weekends I made more than what I made for Vince being on the road for four nights. So it worked out.
Let me take you back to that final show in ECW real quick. When did you first hear that it was over, and was it just devastating for you, or were you already prepared for that eventuality?
Well, I got a phone call on a Monday morning. It was about 9. I remember it like yesterday. It was 9:30 in the morning. Tommy had called me, and he was like, "I'm just letting you know that Paul's going to be on Raw tonight." And I said, "Oh, okay." And I said, "Well, what is he doing?" And he said, "He's working there." And my heart dropped. And because, like, when we did the last pay-per-view, we kind of kept things open, and we all cut promos, and you know, I think I don't know if there was a date, but they were talking about the next pay-per-view might be in a month or blah, blah, blah. So I didn't know if there was going to be like no house shows, and then we were just going to shoot a pay-per-view. I wasn't really 100% sure. But when I heard that Paul was on Raw, going to be on Raw that evening, that was like the final nail in the coffin. And I was just like, we're done, you know, we're done. And I talked to him for a little bit, and I hung up the phone, and I cried and I got it out. And then that evening I turned on Raw and I watched Paulie, and I think he even had his ECW hat on. If I'm not mistaken, I could be wrong, but, and I think he had the leather jacket that I bought him for Christmas. but yeah, we were never told officially this was the end, but we all knew it. So,
and have you spoke to him since? Like, did you see him years later or anything?
Oh yeah, I worked with him for.
Yeah, what was that like?
No, it was perfect because he tried to help me as much as he could there, and you know he was 100% on my side. You know, he was trying to get me on TV. He was trying to write me in with the writers and stuff. So honestly, I don't really have anything negative to say about Paul. I don't like the way things went down. I wish there was like a sit down. I wish he came to that last show, and I wish we could have just been told like, this is the deal, blah, blah, blah. But other than that, like, I love Paul, and I'm so super thankful for what he did for me. So I don't bury him. I don't badmouth him. I mean, like I said, without him, there'd be no me. So I'm grateful to him. He gave me a shot, and, you know, I was successful with it. So I thank him for my career.
At any times through your ECW years, did WCW ever reach out to you for a job?
No. No.
Well, we have, as we talked about off air, we did put it out to Twitter, some questions for you. And okay. We have some just terrible questions on Twitter. I apologize. But we've also got some, you know, what are you going to do? You're Francine, you know.
And, pick the good ones.
You know,
let's pick the good ones.
So, there were some good ones. What was it like on the road for you? And how did you get along with the other ECW females? You've already addressed how you got along with Beulah, but how about the other ECW females that came and went over the years?
Everybody pretty much got along. We used to call ourselves the Philly Clique. So it was basically, it was me, Steve Corino, Jack Victory, Louis Dangerously, Dreamer, even though he wasn't from Philly. Am I forgetting anyone? I don't know if I'm forgetting anyone. But the five of us usually stuck together. We would try to go to like sporting events or go to, oh, C.W. Anderson. How could I forget my man, C.W.? He was with us too. The six of us, we would just try to hang out and stay out of trouble. And my flying partner was always the Sandman. And to this day, if we do something, he's my buddy. He's my flying partner. He was out of Philly as well. And we were just kind of like low key because, like I said earlier, like we weren't a part of the party clique. So for us, we would just like go out, maybe get pizza or go to dinner or something. We weren't big drinkers at the time, and we would just hang out and then, you know, go to bed and get on the road the next day. We traveled a lot. We drove a lot.
What about this one is from Graham Williams, who is a big time listener of the show who I actually can't stand. I despise that guy. But anyway, he wants to know, were there times when you thought things were going too far, either hardcore in the ring or storyline wise?
With me? No.
Like there was nothing that they ever said, hey, do this. And you're like, wow, this might be pushing it a little bit.
No, I'll tell you though, the one thing that I thought was despicable, and I let Paul know, and I let the people involved know, and I wasn't even involved in the angle, but Sam Ann's crucifixion, I took extreme, I was extremely upset, and I took offense to that angle. It sickened me to my stomach. I think because of my religious background, I'm a Catholic. And there were others that were mad, but I mean, I was just disgusted by it. I think as a company, it was in poor taste and it went way too far. With myself, I was always okay with everything. If I wasn't, I don't think I would have did it. You know, like Paul was always like, is that cool with you? And I was like, yeah, no problem. So I was fine with everything, but that angle disgusted me. I hated it. So I don't know. Did you guys see it?
I've seen it.
Do you remember it?
Yeah, you're not the first person I've heard say that who was associated with ECW at the time. You know,
it was embarrassing.
It was just a terrible, terrible idea. I do have one question before we finish up. Thank you again, Francine, for being here.
Sure.
You know, ECW, the fans, there was a lot of stuff that had never been done before. And I know, you know, asking a wrestler if it bothered them when someone chanted something, but, you know, did it ever get to you, you know, she's a crack whore or you have herpes or these crazy chants, the ECW fans. And this question comes to you from someone I will not say, but it is someone we mentioned on the program today. But did that ever bother you? The crack whore chants? I mean, these are thousands of people chanting these terrible things to you. Did you just laugh at it?
It's heat, and that's what I was looking for. So if they didn't say anything, then I wouldn't have been doing my job, correct?
I think that's the way it works, Robbie.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I agree. And Matt, how would you handle if people were chanting that at you?
I don't handle it well. Like Conrad Thompson at the Gramercy Theater had 500 people chanting "fuck Matt Coon," and I didn't like it. I don't think I could ever be a wrestler. I think you have to develop that. I'm a fan, and I think you have to develop that thick skin and that appreciation for the heat, because I definitely, as a fan, I didn't enjoy it. But I guess for you guys, it's a, you know, it shows that you've done your job correctly, right, Robbie?
Yeah, I mean that's the coolest feeling in the world when you know that it's working.
I loved it. I mean, we did an angle where it was right after Tyson and Holyfield when he bit his ear. Paul thought it would make mainstream news if I bit Terry Funk's ear. And so I bite Terry Funk's ear and my whole face is covered in his blood.
Oh my
God. They chanted HIV at me. Okay. You know, but it's just heat, you know, and if I didn't get a response, then Paul probably wouldn't have kept me. So, I welcomed all those crazy chants. I loved it. It was great.
Hey, well, Francine, this was awesome. We wanted to, definitely thank you for being on. And if fans or promoters want to book you or fans want to follow you or interact with you, you want to go ahead and like list your social media and email and all that kind of stuff.
The email is FrancineECWInquiries@gmail.com. And I only have Twitter. It's ECW Diva Francine.
Well, awesome. That is fantastic.
That's my handle, right? Yeah.
Yeah. The handle, of course, at ECW Francine. And thank you very much for joining us, the lovely and beautiful and iconic Francine. We hope you enjoyed being on Wyatt Endon.
I did. Thank you so much. It was a pleasure.
Robbie, we finally had someone beautiful on the show. We had Francine, and she gave a great interview, and she didn't really pull any punches. I thought it was a good time. What'd you think?
I thought it was great, and you know, I actually wrote this on a tweet, but I didn't reveal it. But like in a high school, oh my God, I had a Francine 469 shirt. I met her, I believe, twice, and bought autographed pictures from her, and I had posters of her all over my wall. So this was like, you know, bringing me back to my high school days. And I have a fact. Are you wearing the Francine 469 shirt right now, Matt?
I didn't know one existed until 10 seconds ago. And that's kind of fucked up because you're saying, hey, Francine, Matt had this big crush on you. But meanwhile, you've got every piece of Francine merch probably hung up on your wall right now.
I had to put the heat on you. I had to put it on you. I can't, you know, play myself out like that. Come on.
I'm such a rookie. Like, you know everything about wrestling and I know everything about everything else. So I think it's a good combination.
No, but her story is awesome. I mean, when you really go back in time to the mid-90s like that, when wrestling was so different, and this 110-pound woman, girl, young girl, that still lives with her parents is just like this, the queen of extreme in the ECW arena to the world. It's just, it's bizarre. And again, you wouldn't, it's like, she really kind of seems like almost a girl next door. You know, she said she didn't party or do anything like that. And you wouldn't have thought that about her, you know?
When you think about this 110-pound woman, you know, when 911 gave you a choke slam, like, he was doing it for real. Like, yeah. You know, and that total elimination, that was, it looked fantastic because I'm pretty sure it was real, you know? Like, she must have just been injured all the time, that poor girl.
Yeah, but she is possibly, I mean, when you really think about it, to not complain and to ask for finishes, like she said, I mean, she's definitely a tough, tough woman. And it shows you those girls that were in ECW, how tough they were.
Did she say she had 10 checks in a row bounce? Is that something she said?
Yeah, but she got reimbursed. And the $35 fees also. So, I mean, that kind of makes it right?
Man, I love wrestling so much. So, here, and thank you once again for listening to Why It Ended. We hope you enjoyed just a little shift in what we've been doing by having Francine on. Of course, you can reach us on Twitter at Why It Ended and go to our Patreon site and get a few extras, but also support the show so we can keep bringing it to you for free at patreon.com/Why It Ended. Check out our t-shirts at prowrestlingtees.com/Why It Ended and also our YouTube channel, which is whereended.com. Robbie, where can we find you and what are you up to this weekend?
Twitter, Robbie E. Impact, Instagram at Real Robbie E. And then this weekend, I will be in Bethany, Connecticut for Northeast Wrestling, where I'm one half of the tag team champions. And the show features Jared the King Lawler. It's going to be a really good show. So I'm looking forward to that.
Now, you've already defended these titles against one of the greatest tag teams of all time, Jerry the King Lawler and Ryback.
Yeah, so, and somehow we still have them. I don't know how, but we do.
Well, you know, it couldn't have been their chemistry because I'm sure it was fantastic. But, of course, Robbie, you're wrestling all the time. Lots of stuff going on. I'm Matt Kuhn at Matt Kuhn Music, and this is Why It Ended.